fitter, happier, more productive, comfortable, wider, angle, podium, member, drive. Join the Wide Angle Podium Network. Get on better with your associate employee contemporaries. As low as $5 a month. Swag and bonus content. No more microwave dinners. Go to wideanglepodium.com/donate. No killing moths.
Hello, cyclocross friends, and welcome to episode 81 of Crosshairs Radio. On today's show, we have Ellen Noble. Caught up with Ellen at Mount St. Anne. Unfortunately, it was right after she hit her head in a practice round and was feeling some concussion-like symptoms and didn't want to race the next day. But she still felt good enough, you know, to talk to us. And we had a really nice chat up there in Canada at the Mountain Bike World Cup. And we will get to that conversation in just 1 minute. Okay, maybe 5 minutes, possibly six. First off, I want to start off by sort of following up on what you heard there in the opening about the Wide Angle Podium Donor Drive. It's August, and August is our donor month, and that's when we want you to become a member of the Wide Angle Podium Podcast Network, and you can do that by going to wideanglepodium.com/donate. We're looking for 200 new members. That sounds like a big number, 200, but compared to the thousands of people that listen to our shows, the 500,000 downloads, 500,000 downloads since the network started, we can find 200 of you at least to become new members of the network. At the minimum, we're asking you for a one-time donation. That's awesome. But what would you really like? We'd like to hold on to you. We want you to be part of the team. We want you to be part of our exclusive club and become a recurring paying member. It only takes as little as $5 a month. I'm no mathematician, but that's like $60 a year. It's not a lot of money. And up from that, most of you can afford that. I know a lot of you can afford more than that. Think of this. Think of Wide Angle Podium Podcast Network as a cyclocross race. I want you to commit to my series, my Wide Angle Podium Podcast Network series. Let's say it's just four races. Let's say you're paying $30 a race. Enter my series. You're going to get great stuff for it. If you join at the lowest level, let's say you're just a junior in our series, then you're going to get a big thumbs up. If you're at $10 a month, you get bonus content like everybody else, and you also get a sticker pack. If you move up to the $15 per month level, you get a fidget spinner. Everybody can hate you for having a fidget spinner, but you say no. This is the coolest fidget spinner ever because it's a Wide Angle Podium branded fidget spinner. Yeah. You want to put ceramic bearings in that thing? You go for it. We're not going to give them to you, but you can do that. Go to YouTube. I'm sure they'll tell you how. At $20 a month, you get a t-shirt. Brand new t-shirt. Brand new design. Wide Angle Podium. And then you also get the sticker pack and the water bottle and the fidget spinner. And the bonus content. It's all there. You get great shows too. Slow Ride Podcast. Yeah, they're pretty good. We Got to Hang Out. They're awesome. The Consummate Athlete Podcast. Also awesome. Bike Shop CX. My buddies, David Ballin and Scott Diedenbach. Those guys are killing it. They're like the new guys come in here. But they're actually old guys because they've been doing this forever. But now they're on the network. And you guys got to check that out. We got the Honest Bicycle Program. We got the Crosshairs Radio, the show you're listening to right now. If you like this show, go check out all the other ones, Dirt Field Recordings, and become a member. Join my series. Join the WAP series. It's not going to cost you a lot. It's going to help us continue to do this. It's going to make it so I don't have to sit here for now 3 minutes and continue to tell you, to plead with you to join. WideAnglePodium.com/donate. You can choose the shows that you want to support. So if I'm just like at the point right now where you're like, Bill, if you don't shut the hell up, I'm not supporting your show, that's fine. Go check the box for We Got to Hang Out or the Dirt Field Recordings or Bike Shop CX. I mean, if you really want to hurt me, go support Slow Ride Podcast. Fine. I understand. I'll get the message. But we're looking for at least 200 of you. And we need you to please become members. All right. Moving on. HealthIQ.com. You guys knew this one was coming. That is a life insurance company. They support the Wide Angle Podium. They're in the series. They're like a title sponsor of the series that we want you to be a part of. Life insurance is, it's one of those things you aren't buying for you, but for the ones in your life, your spouse, your dependents. It's an easy thing to put off, but it's always the first question that a financial advisor is going to ask you. What's your life insurance policy? How are you covered? Is your family covered? And it's something that Health IQ can check that box, can make you make your financial advisor happy, and then also set up your family. That's the most important part, and your loved ones. They want healthy people to be their clients. That's who they want to work for. We know that's you because you're interested in the Wide Angle Podium Podcast Network and you're a member of the series. Therefore, you're healthy. You have a lower resting heart rate probably. Maybe you have a low carb diet. These are things that other life insurance companies may ding you for. They say, hey, that's a positive. We want those people on board. We're going to find them savings. And that's what they do. They are a life insurance company that's going to go out and find you savings. What you need to do is go to healthiq.com/cxhairs, fill out the survey. They're going to contact you. You'll have a little chat with them and then see if it's right for you. You know, go shop around, look at other quotes, see what you can get. And I'll bet you when you come back to Health IQ that they're going to be able to get you more savings. So healthiq.com/cxhairs. WideAnglePodium.com/donate. And now, let's go talk to Ellen Noble.
All right, Ellen Noble, worst fake beginning question ever. How are you?
Oh, I couldn't be better.
we're at rainy Mount St. Anne, and you are supposed to be racing a mountain bike race tomorrow.
Yeah, mountain bike race that I'm actually not going to be racing.
What happened?
I crashed. I decided to run some pretty slick tires out there today, and I lost control on one of the rock faces, and I RKO'd myself pretty badly. Went face first into a rock and hit my face, and my helmet broke it, and yeah, concussion symptoms are back. Just got over the last one.
That is not good at all. When you're as a bike racer, inherently dangerous, and then you decide to do something like this. Have you done Mount St. Anne in the past?
Yeah, this is my fourth year being here.
Okay, that's what I thought. So it's not like it's something new. No. And you always get a couple mountain bike races in your season a year, yeah? Mm-hmm. So I'm assuming this is probably one of the bigger ones.
Yeah, this is usually the biggest race that I'll do. Back when Wyndham was a World Cup, I would do both of the World Cups back to back. But yeah, this is definitely the biggest race that I do in a season for mountain biking. I won't make it to Worlds because, it coincides with cyclocross, or even if I had Worlds aspirations or had the potential to go based on like selection and stuff, I still wouldn't be able to make it, in terms of timing. I didn't really do any mountain bike races this year. Actually, the only mountain bike race that I will have done all season was a collegiate race at UMass. So, this was kind of a big jump for me, but I felt really good on course yesterday. And even today I rode the hardest part of Beatrice and then kind of just little bit of luck with a slippery rock on slick tires. Just kind of lost control.
Front tire. Because it seemed like that was the problem today, is like those little slippery, especially when you were out there because mm-hmm. it was early. So it just started raining when it was the worst. And
yeah, so it was like a little slick, and I was braking. I was trying not to brake too much because I didn't want to like lock up my wheels and start skidding. But I think either way, it was kind of pick your poison. Like, don't break a lot and fly down it, or break too much and start skidding. And I was kind of like, kind of walking that line, and I just ended up going a little too fast down a line that I hadn't dialed perfectly. And yeah, just like one of those freak things.
So I know a lot of people do, you know, there are a lot of, you look at the whole, practically the whole Luna team, they race cyclocross, but they're sort of reverse of you. They're mountain bikers first, mm-hmm. that then also do cross. Does this, now that you are a full-time professional athlete, mainly cyclocross and road, does this sort of bring up, like, if it's worth it to even do these races? Or do you I'm trying to get to the point of, like, it's, again, it's inherently dangerous, mm-hmm. but then you want to do these things, and where do you, right. is there a line that gets drawn?
There's a line, but this isn't it, at least yeah. for me. I think that there is, like, that there's a time and a place to push your limits. But for me, I, like, my dream is to go back to cross country someday. So, like, coming here was, like, kind of a necessary risk. Like, I mean, definitely you never expect to crash. You never expect to hurt yourself most of the time. But, like, coming here, I definitely didn't expect that this would be, that it would end this way. But yeah, I mean, like, in the, like, couple weeks leading up to our cyclocross season, no, I won't go downhilling. And right. like right before, like, the big road racing block that I did of, like, the races that I was targeting, I don't ride trails as much. Yeah. So, like, I try to, like, avoid those, because I feel like, you know, there's like a gradient. It's like you start with, like, an easy road ride, and then all the way on the other end of the spectrum, there's, like, the downhill, like, going to, like, the downhill park with your friends. And so it's like I just try to avoid, like, really big, like, multi-step jumps, but mm-hmm. like from cyclocross to mountain bike racing, it's not that big of a jump. And I feel like this stuff helps me a ton, because standing at the top of Beatrice and looking down makes standing at the top of the drops at Zolder and Namur seem like nothing. So
oh yeah,
it's super valuable. And also, like, I don't want to spend the rest of my career just worrying about what could go wrong. Yeah. Kind of like to think about, like, all the things that could go right. Like, if today had gone well and I'd race tomorrow. I mean, like, I love racing in the wet and slick conditions. Like, that's where I excel. And so I think, like, you know, had tomorrow gone well, I think it could have kind of put me back on track for coming back to XC racing in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So the risk versus reward of going here was great, but the risk versus reward of racing tomorrow is not. So that's why I'm going to sit it out, but I'm glad that I came and I at least tried, and I'm not injured forever and I'll come back.
But that's good to hear that it's that cross country is still on your mind and something you're looking forward to as your career progresses. Cause it was pretty much, it's kind of funny. Cause when we think about you from last year, it was this time last year when I'm thinking, oh, just getting these awesome road results. And then you're like, I'm not leaving cyclocross. I still
right.
love that. But, you know, if I can do well on the road, I want to do that too. And then even adding this other discipline as well.
Yeah, I feel like we talked at, like, this time last summer when we did the podcast. And I had, like, been talking to a couple of road teams. And it was, like, just after we talked that I signed with Team Colavita Bianchi. And so I actually had a really amazing year with them, just in terms of, like, enjoyment. I had a lot of fun. My results weren't really where I wanted them to be. I've had like a pretty tough, like, spring and summer. So it wasn't, like, really a great season for me per se, but, like, the team dynamic and having, like, so many amazing teammates has been, like, a very new experience for me as a person who's always kind of been solo, or at least, like, at yeah. the very least, I've had very few female teammates in my life. So to have, like, this huge group of strong women around me all the time was, like, eye-opening and really, like, perspective changing. But it's tough. Yeah, I mean, I would really love to come back to cross country. I always said that I would do a season on the road at the very least as like an investment year, because, like, I needed to invest in my fitness and power, which is, like, undoubtedly my weakest point. Which I think I've, like, spoken to you about in the past, just, like, needing to kind of fix that stuff or improve on it, like, train your weaknesses so they become your strengths. But it's just hard. Like, I miss mountain bike racing, but it's tough to think about leaving the road community that I mm-hmm. have. So yeah, I'm not getting pulled, let me say that, but I'm kind of pulling myself in a lot of directions.
Yeah.
But cyclocross yeah. always, it's just kind of figuring out how the other disciplines that I have a lot of, like, emotional connection to will fit in.
Well, I mean, for cyclocross now, even though your team has grown, and we can talk about that. But now, and I got to get on Powers to get another women racer in there as well, sort of even it back up.
Yeah, I was even thinking about that a little bit today, just in terms of, like, I mean, in road, it's nice because, like, we have teams that are dedicated to women. Like, you have to have a full roster to be a road team, or at least, like, a successful one for the most part, unless you look at Crit Star or Amber Neben. But for the most part, like, you have, like, a full roster, like Colavita or UHC or Rally. But it's funny how in mountain biking, and I would dare say even a little bit in cross, though I do think that there is a little difference here. It's in mountain biking, like, there's no room for redundancies. So you talk about, like, oh, it would be so cool to ride for this team. Yeah, but they already have so-and-so. Like, you know, there are no teams that have, like, if a team has a woman, then they're, like, then you won't get on it. It's very funny to think about that, as if, like, as if the men's side doesn't have any redundancies. Like, yeah, like a team like Fidea.
Well, I was saying, for cyclocross, that's 100% true. I mean, it's always the token.
There's women. The token female.
Yeah.
Yeah, on every team. And so it's super funny because, like, they'd be like, oh, well, you know, I think about a team like Fidea where they have so many strong riders, and they're like, well, you know, you couldn't get on such and such team because, like, they already have so-and-so. But I think I'm like, they have 15, like, young U23 riders, any of which could win a race. Like, there's a lot of redundancies. And, I mean, of course, they all bring value to a team in their own unique way, but it's just a funny thing to think about how, like, for a woman, if a team already has a woman, then they're kind of off that, like, it's, you're off their radar.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it would be super cool to see Aspire be able to expand in that way. Because, like, I think that they've always, you know, Jeremy and the rest of the staff have always done such a wonderful job of trying to push the limits of, like, what American cyclocross can be. And so, like, Jeremy starting his own program, you know, with Aspire after taking over Rafa Focus, and, you know, doing that and kind of, like, showing how legitimate cyclocross can be in terms of support and, like, only doing one day races to really put an emphasis on being more European like, and stuff like that. He's always been kind of leading the way. And so to, like, have another woman that, even if they were also young and also got good results, like, even if we were in direct competition with each other, it would still be cool.
Yeah, no, I agree. And it's true. You do see that with men and on the same team and, mm-hmm. and compete. We see it out here with the mountain bike stuff, you know? And,
even
on something like Telenet Fidea, where you really don't know who the leader is at this point, because they're all up there.
Exactly. There's, like, no specific captain per se.
I mean, I guess Lars Vanderhaar supposedly, but who knows this year? What's
but then,
happen.
You know, Toon was European champion. Yeah. So they're all really good.
Yeah.
So,
Okay, so we jumped into the whole women's inequality part pretty early here, only 10 minutes in, but we could spend, like, the next 2 hours on that.
Yeah.
But I did want to, it seems like, you know, from when we spoke last year, where these were definitely issues that we talked about, to this year, I don't know if this was a conscious change or not, but you seem to be more public about it, or more sort of standing up for what you believe in publicly.
Yeah, yeah.
And kind of pushing back on stuff that's out there.
Yeah, it's funny to think about. I mean, I can't say for sure, like, when my first kind of, like, when I was kind of like, I don't want to be, like, I don't want to just, like, nod my head and go along with things. But actually thinking back to this race 1 year ago, like, right around this time, they told us that our race had been combined with the elite women's field.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, that kind of sucks. But, you know, like, we had to wake up early, so I guess, like, that's kind of nice. We'll race at, like, 4 or something. And so, like, we started a minute behind the elite women. And what I did not anticipate is how quickly we would catch the back of the elite women's field.
Yeah.
So on Beatrice in the first lap. And the worst part is the people that you catch are the people that are going the slowest.
Well, and that's
so the people that are running Beatrice are the people that you're catching first.
And it's also, World Cups are this strange animal where it is a elite field, but not necessarily a pro field, because if you can get into on your federation's team, you can race. So you're going to have people out there, even at that elite level, who aren't necessarily elite riders.
Well, and I think about something that like Catherine Bertin demonstrated really well, and like with her goal of trying to go to the Olympics by becoming a citizen, was it of the Bahamas? So like there are countries that have like a good rider. Or, like, they at least have a national federation, but they don't have, like, it's not as competitive. Like, with the U.S., you know, like, we can only bring a certain number of people. And, like, there's, like, a pretty good depth of field here. There's a really great talent pool in the United States and other countries like the Dutch and Belgium. So, there are certain people that get to go. And I love that they're here. But it doesn't mean that the U23s should be on course with the elites. And so, like, my race was compromised because I was crashed out by a woman at the back of the elite field. Mm-hmm. And so, like, having to, like, try to get by them and people won't let you by. And you're like, I caught you. Could you just move over, please? Right. You know, like, you try to be nice, but it's really aggravating. And so, like, thinking about that, when I got home, I wrote about it. And I was like, I just don't think that they could send a louder message that says, like, this is how little we care about women's racing. And I was like, if that's like, that's what they're saying. And like the message was received loud and clear. And I remember I wrote that, people were like, oh my God, like we never would have known that this had happened to you guys if you hadn't written about it and stuff like that. And so, yeah, since then I've kind of realized like I'm really opinionated and it's funny that my opinions are controversial considering like all that I'm really asking for, or like all that I believe is really just in like treating people with respect and equality. But yeah, or like what's the quote, feminism is the radical idea that women are people. Yeah. Like that's where I'm at right now. And so, yeah, I think I've definitely become more, like air quote controversial, but really I've just decided that like, there are some things that need to be said. And the best thing for me has been like building this amazingly supportive, like kind of tight knit group of people around me that feel the same way. Like I've actually become like really close with my, and I say this joke, like laughingly, like my fan base, like the people that like love to see racers like advocating for stuff. Cause it's easy to just like kind of get in, get out with whatever you're doing. Like you can just show up to a race and.
Yeah. I always many times a year we'll use the Michael Jordan quote when he was, I think it was even, he's from North Carolina. I think it was Jesse Helms who just, not the best senator in the world, but they were like, oh, will you campaign for his Democratic, candidate that's who's running against Jesse Helms? And his reply was, Republicans buy shoes too.
Yep.
So he wouldn't do it.
Right.
He wouldn't stand up what he probably believes in because it's like, I don't want to get in the way of my public persona and somehow, tarnish that. So, yeah. No. So I think it's great. I think it's great when people speak up. I hate when people say, why don't you just go race your bike? Why don't you just go play football? Why don't you do whatever? Because there are people too, you're allowed to have an opinion and you're allowed to advocate for what you believe in.
Well, I mean, one thing's like, Republicans buy shoes too. And like, that's one of the schools of thought for it. But for me, the better thing is like, if a Republican wants to buy, who'd you say, Michael Jordan's shoes?
Yeah,
Like Air Jordans. Like maybe they will, but they have like no real reason to, just because like you're likable. That's not going to like encourage them to go out and buy a pair of shoes. But if someone like very strongly resonates with who you are and like what you're standing up for, I think that, and let me be clear. What I'm doing is not because I'm trying to sell.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I brought up that the point of his quote is I don't want to make anybody who might be a customer have a reason not to like me.
For me, like, I think that it's super hard, like, with sponsorship. I mean, sometimes you see it, like, sponsorship works. And so, like, especially, like, with a company like Cool Vita, who's been such a great supporter of me, like, their stuff, it's not as hard to, like, convince someone to buy a bottle of olive oil as it would be to convince someone to buy a bike because there's a much bigger price tag. Mm-hmm. But, people see that Cola Vita has been a great supporter of me. And when they're at the olive oil store, they buy Cola Vita they buy their pasta or their pesto, which I love. And like, they'll even tag me in it and they're like, sponsorship works. And it's super cool to see that. But I'm trying to tie this all in because I have many thoughts about
I'll tell you this here. And I know I'm sitting here with my shirt on, my truck factory racing shirt on, but that is, I thought, was one of the greatest sponsorship works things that has happened with Waterloo and equal pay for women.
Absolutely.
Look at the positive vibes, the positive feedback, track, all over the place. Everybody's talking about this. 99.3% of the people are speaking about it positively and wanting to support this company.
Right.
You can't buy that kind of PR.
No, absolutely not.
And all they had to do was do what is the right thing to do, but they're the only ones doing it.
Well, and so that's the funny thing, because this is a much greater conversation than I could possibly convey here, especially without like a notes and like,
I'm doing it when you just hit yourself in the head.
I know. I'm like, okay, be coherent. But like, so for a company like Trek, let's say that all bikes are created equal and like someone's like, okay, I could buy a Trek. I'm probably going to get in trouble for using
I could buy any 10
of these
right.
brands.
Yeah.
But there's a company. So, you know, if we're using Trek as an example, they're supporting equal payout for a World Cup. Or, you know, a company like Bianchi that I race for, like they support a women's bike, like they support a women's cycling team.
Right.
Or even Focus has been like a very long supporter of me for cyclocross. Like long before I had the results to warrant support, Focus has been behind me. And like, so those brands that support women's cycling very passionately, and they don't objectify us. They don't make us do weird, like sexy magazine pictures or something. So like those companies that like support us as people, not as like cute bike racers, they're the ones that if all else equal, people are going to support, because they're like, well, like they gave me a reason to want to support them instead of just because they make good bikes.
Yeah.
So I think like kind of going above and beyond, I think that's really, really valuable.
Actually, we witnessed an interview question today at the venue. It was to a woman racer, what's the strangest pickup line you've heard?
Yeah, I've heard that one before.
At a bike race.
Mm.
I mean, just strangest pickup line at a bike. I'm saying you're
asking
this in
the
context of, I'm racing this race. These are the questions.
So
here's
my thing with equality is I guess it's about equality. It's like, would you ask that? My question back would be, would you ask that to my male teammate or my male cycling friend?
Yeah, I don't think, I mean, and that's the thing. And it's, I'm trying to put myself in the mindset. It was actually a woman who was interviewing another woman, but I guess it's general interest. You're trying to humanize, but yeah, you're right. You wouldn't go there. You know, what's your favorite food?
Right.
You
well,
know, what do you do when you're not riding your bike?
If that's like, because I did a, an interview with a publication that like, they have like the rapid fire five questions and they ask the same five every time.
Right.
So it's like, if that's part of your rapid fire question, I'm like, okay, cool. No big deal. But I just don't want to feel like I'm being singled out as a woman, because like, it's not about dating me, or it's not about me getting pickup lines. Like I'm here to ride.
We've talked about that.
But yeah, I guess like, you know, I am bummed because I feel like I have a lot of thoughts on the equality thing. And so I guess the biggest thing that I was talking about is like, you know, having that greater connection with your supporters. That's more than just like, here's me biking. Here's me at a different angle while also biking. It's like creating that bigger connection is, I think, like what drives people to support a company, because they love that a company is supporting someone who's like they can really connect with.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, I think that like just speaking my mind and believing what I believe, I'm not like doing anything for people to like me more or whatever. But speaking my mind has like created a better connection. I've had a lot of really great conversations that have stemmed from it. And I think I think the best thing is when people say that what I've written or like what I've stood up for has changed their perspective. That's all that I've ever wanted to hear.
Yeah, that's
and so
incredible.
Like I respect any athlete and like whatever their approach is, whether they're like just being likable and kind of going with the flow or like kind of standing up for what they believe in. But for me, it was just like, I've always been really, really outspoken. So it just seems like a little natural to speak my mind and push for what women and other like marginalized groups deserve. So
now you just have to, my Twitter exercise for you is to stop after three replies where the people just keep saying the same thing back to you.
You're a part of that thread. When we both just said, hey, I think we're out. Yeah. I was like, okay, I'm in too deep. But like, how do you just stop? Because like otherwise then you just have to admit defeat. I've had a couple where I'm like,
you're not,
I gotta
because,
go.
Yeah, well, they're just doing it to piss you off. It's just trolling, and they go, no, I'm just asking a question.
The Onion headline that's like, man playing devil's advocate is just an asshole. Like, it's so true. Everyone's like, I'm just being devil's advocate and asking questions that I know are really going to piss you off. And I think the best thing that I've gotten before is like, I don't care. I'm just asking questions that like, they're like a promoter might ask you. I'm like, well, I don't need help practicing my responses. I do that in my head all the time. So I definitely need to get better about like bickering with people on Twitter. I've had a few lately though, but I've just said like, you know what? Not even worth it. If they think that they won because of what they said to me, so be it, but I'm just not going to devote.
But that's the thing. It's like, but there's the thing is that they only have a pulpit because you are giving it to them by replying.
I know.
Without that, they have their 70 followers.
I know. Yeah.
Who half of them are probably bots. So,
yep.
I fall into the same thing.
Yep.
And finally, nice. And I'm like, I'm just going to go over to Instagram and post pictures.
Yeah. Going back to the storybook.
Yeah. But no, but it is. As I started this whole thing, I was just, you know, saying that I think it's nice to see you, not to say that you were quiet before, but sort of standing up, being a public figure in our community who isn't afraid to speak her mind, which is good.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
So let's talk about this 33% bigger Aspire program. So
yeah.
Spencer Petrov, how does this change things for the season, if at all? Or what new things can we look forward to?
Well, he is my new roommate, so that's going to be an interesting transition for me, but I'm excited about it. He's super sweet, so it's not like it's actually going to be an issue. It's just funny because like 2 days before I left for this trip, he showed up and I was like, hey, hope that the house looks good. I got to go.
Oh, so he's moved. So he's like,
he moved from Ohio East Hampton, Massachusetts, where Jeremy
and myself, going through the indoctrination, mm-hmm. the East Hampton indoctrination.
Yeah, he's becoming a part of the cult, whether or not he knows it yet.
Yeah,
he like, I believe that he has plans of like leaving in the spring and going elsewhere. I don't fully know, but I'm like, yeah good luck with that.
Yeah. Oh yeah. that's what I've seen. People go and they never leave.
Yeah. It is a little cult-esque sometimes. We're basically like mini Boulder with how annoying we are about how great it is. But I mean, I don't know exactly how much it's going to change things. Mm-hmm. Like I don't know like exactly what he's doing, and not because I don't care or I don't think that Spencer is totally wonderful, but I know that I know what I'm doing and it doesn't impact what I'm doing. So that's my limited.
Let's talk about that. What's your program this year? What do you got planned as far as domestic versus Europe, and what's the race and schedule looking like?
So as it stands right now, I'll be in the States through Louisville and Pan Ams, and then for November and December I'll be in Europe. So after last year, I chased the full World Cup schedule, and it was a lot of flying back and forth. You know, I went over for Valkenburg, and then the Thanksgiving trip, and the canceled Thanksgiving trip, and the Christmas trip, and then we went for Fugi through Worlds, and then I actually lived in Spain for the winter, too. I flew home between Worlds and going to Spain, like, a week later. I only went home for a week just to, like, get my stuff packed up. So I did 5 flights to Europe over the course of, like, 6 months, and I was like, never again. You could not pay me enough to get on a plane right now. So I just decided to kind of, like, go over there for a while. It's like a similar schedule to what one of my friends, Stephen Hyde, did.
Sure.
And so like it seemed to work out really well for him. And I'm just trying to like embrace that European lifestyle a little bit. Like I think the older generation of riders, or even some of the younger generation too, have kind of feared what Europe is. But I think if you kind of embrace it and stop fighting it, I think it's I think it's a lot better. So going over there and just sort of like getting to do some of the non-World Cups too is really exciting for me. Like this year, I don't think I'll be able to do Zonhoven, but you know, like Zonhoven or Spa, like
those are great races.
Doing those bigger races, like really, really excited about that. The only non-World Cup I've done over there is Hama or like the Flandrian Cross.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, getting to do Hammy as one of the USAC kids called it, which was really funny. Yeah, getting to do, you know, those races is like really cool. So, and it just, I feel like it just makes you a better racer. Like I love the, community in American cyclocross, like the fans, it's like more personal. Like a lot of the European fans, like they're big fans, but all they want, they're like, rider card. And then you give them the card, they go, okay, thank you. Goodbye. Or like, actually maybe they don't even say thank you. They might just leave. Whereas like almost to a fault, sometimes the American racer or the American fans, like, you get to know them so well, and like you're like late for your dinner reservation because like you talk to them for so long, but like you just get to know people. Like you get to like know the fans and their kids and like what kind of bikes their kids are riding, and like you cheer for them and stuff. And so it's like really, I'm going to miss that a little bit for the couple months. Well,
and that's always the European guys when they come over and they all get freaked out because everybody's cheering for them.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, why are they cheering for me? I'm from Belgium, you know, they're American. They're like,
but they
cheer for
love
everybody.
Them. Oh my God. Yeah. It's so funny how much the American racers like worship the Euros. Yeah. I mean, even I do. I've had to like try to keep my cool this week. So yeah, it's like, it's super funny. Seeing that difference, but I'm happy that I'll get like a really good American block here and then go over to Europe. And then, yeah, obviously coming home for nationals and then back for, I don't think this year that there's a race before Hoogerheide. I needed to double check, but I didn't see it.
Yeah, I don't know.
Italy definitely did not get World Cup status again, which is unfortunate for me, but I think most people were pretty excited about that. But yeah, I'm really excited. I feel like this year is going to be a lot more manageable, and you know, making like taking out a couple of factors allows me to take a couple more steps up. Like last year, it was just kind of focusing on getting by, like whatever it took. Like diet kind of fell to the wayside because like I could only handle so much last year. But if I'm like actually in one place for more than 9 or 10 days at a time, I actually might be able to like kind of get my crap together a little more.
Yeah,
so
I mean, I went through the same thing just from last year starting with, you know, doing the mountain bike world cups to this year, where it truly is, you just sort of have to accept what Europe is and how it operates and you know, not fight it and bring a lot of food with you.
Yeah, I know. I'm not kidding. I'm already planning like how I'm gonna, that's why I think I'd really like to do the one, like a 5-day trip over for Coxsaida, because they switched it with Valkenburg this year, obviously, because Valkenburg is for Worlds. But yeah, I'm like thinking, oh, if I go over for Coxsaida, then I could leave some stuff there. Like I could leave like a waffle iron, I can leave my magnesium and like my measuring cups and
the
stuff.
Waffle iron.
Yeah. So I could like leave all of that stuff, and then I wouldn't have to fly over with it the next time since I'm going to be over there for so long.
Right.
So
yeah. No, I'm the same way. I have a tripod and some other stuff that just sort of hang out over there now. So I don't have to keep bringing them back. But yeah, the funny thing was then sort of figured all that out, and then we had mountain bike nationals at Snowshoe. Was it last week, 2 weeks ago, it was. And that was like even worse because we came up with some food, but then there was like nowhere on Snowshoe to like get food.
Yeah.
And even the restaurants were like, it's off season. They were like closing at 8:30 and we weren't done working until like 10, you know. I was like, oh man, this is worse than being like in Czech Republic.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That's how it feels sometimes in Belgium when you're like, okay, what are we going to do for food?
Yeah.
We could go to cigarette cafe or beer garden. We've been stuck. We were in Germany, I think. And we had a super, super, super hard time finding food. Yeah. I remember Steven stayed with Jeremy and I for the trip. Cause like, I think we may have been like some of the only USA Cycling people there. And we like all shared like a hotel, and we're just cooking stuff on like a little griddle that we have that comes like with that comes in our van.
Right.
But we were like cooking food and like making potatoes in a griddle, and we're just like, what's going on? We couldn't find anything in like the middle of nowhere in Germany. It's, it's always an interesting experience, but I love it.
Yeah. But now, I mean, you know, traveling with these guys who are so experienced, they all know they like the supermarket to stop 70 kilometers out of where you're going, because that's the place you're going to be able to get food.
Yep.
And that's, I think that's kind of it. And that's sort of the message that I think a lot of the Americans have figured out, is you kind of need that local knowledge, or you need somebody. And then once you get the hang of it, as you were saying, then it's much easier. And then you can just sort of enjoy it and not, and worry about your racing instead of everything else, which I think is what happens. I think that's part of the problem that people have racing over there, is that you get so bogged down and worried about logistics and everything else that you're not worrying about training and racing.
Yeah. I mean, even just like for me, I mean, partially, so like having that local knowledge has been like part of the main motivation in staying in Sittard with USA Cycling at the USA Cycling house, because I know it. And it's not like my favorite place in the entire world. I mean, my favorite place in the entire world is probably like somewhere that I haven't even been yet, but like, it's fine. And I know the roads, and I know that there's an Albert Heijn there, and they have like a pretty good Thai restaurant that has curry that I like a lot. And they have like a really great clothing store called America Today. And it's super Euro somehow still.
Of course it is.
Yeah, I'm like, is this what you guys think Americans dress like?
It's inspired by what they think Americans dress
like.
Yeah,
and it's like the most Euro clothing store in the world. So like, I mean, and like you know it, and it has character, and they have like good trails and stuff. So like, that's why we go back there, because we have that that local knowledge now. And I think the other thing is, like you were talking about, like the things that you can just focus on, like having like the amazing Aspire Racing manager, Molly Herford, has like really, really changed like the race stuff, because like she just takes care of things. Mm-hmm. And like, I mean, Molly's phenomenal at what she does first and foremost, because like she's like a logistical wizard. But also just in general, having a person that's able to help you and like coordinate groceries and food, you're like, oh my God, that's like one less thing that I have to worry about. And it's insane like how much energy it gives you, knowing that like there's going to be food in the fridge, instead of having to like time it between, like, especially when we stay in Sittard, like it's pretty centrally located, so you like we'll drive to Zolder pre-ride, and then you come home and you stay there that night, and then we drive to Zolder the next day for racing. And so knowing that there's going to be food in the fridge when we get home from pre-ride before the race is like, that's pretty nice. It's crazy. Like, you know, we were talking about marginal gains or whatever, and people are probably cringing hearing me say that, but it's a pretty big gain to have that.
More
like,
than marginal.
Yeah. It's
a significant
maximal
gain.
Maximal gains.
So are you and Jeremy then doing the same? Are you all going to be in Europe at the same time? Are you diverging at all schedule-wise?
So
to be determined?
For sure, right now it's Molly and I, and I think she might be coming over there with me full-time.
Okay.
Which I don't actually know that for sure yet.
Nice.
But, you know, Jeremy just had a kid.
Yes.
So I think that's going to change his travel schedule a little bit. How? I can't say. I do not know.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, like, maybe he'll come over for a little bit, but he will certainly not be over there for 2 months with me.
Right.
I mean, and in truth, there isn't as much of a reason for him to. Like, racing the World Cups for him is super great and doing that. But I actually don't fully know his schedule. It's something that, like, you know, with how busy we've both been, we haven't really had a chance to be like, hey, so what are you doing? and then for Spencer, I believe he'll come over and stay with me and a little bit, but I don't fully know his schedule either. All I know is I'm going to be over there and hopefully I have some company.
So how much longer are you still U23?
Well, it's kind of a sore subject. This was going to be my last race as an under 23
ever.
So it's over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's it.
So elites next year across the board.
Yeah. Yep. I was like, oh my God, last race is an under 23 going out on top. I'm so excited. And then I went out, but not on top.
Yeah.
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 So.
Man, especially like World Cup women's U23 field this year.
I know.
Like Kate in there and
Evie. This year.
Yeah,
I
for
know.
Mountain bike.
Oh, and then watching Anne Marie race in there too.
Oh yeah.
Oh my God. It's been crazy to watch all my cross friends.
Yeah.
So well.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So that all right. So cyclocross nationals first year as an elite.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's is a performance there. Is that a goal for the year?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's like a lot of riders don't want to like have that don't want to talk about their objectives.
Mm-hmm.
Like I've seen many, many racers. And so for a long time, I thought that it was like taboo. If someone was like, so like, what are your goals for the year? And I think like, well, a couple of things. First,
well, you're not supposed to call them goals, are you?
Oh, you're not?
Oh, I don't know. Are they goals?
I don't know.
Is it objectives?
Does it matter?
Something like goals became like this dirty word. I don't know.
Oh, maybe because people go hashtag goals.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm still for goals.
I have no idea.
We'll call
okay,
it
my objectives, my like, my dreams. A couple of things. One, I think like at my cyclocross, not a camp, at my cyclocross class that I ran this year.
We need to talk about
that.
Yeah,
so we called that...
Quest.
We had this amazing conversation with Gwen Jorgensen.
Yeah.
Which
really?
Was like,
awesome.
Holy crap. So I was going to talk to the girls about social media and sponsorship one night. On the last night of the camp, we had a big pizza party. And then all of a sudden I get a text or an Instagram message from Patrick Lemieux, her husband. And he was like, hey, Gwen was wondering if she could call in with you guys. And she would love to talk to you.
She's the best.
And they were like, you know, if you have a minute, no stress. And I was like, I don't care what we had planned. I was like, girls, change of schedule. Everyone grab a cup of water because we're going to be sitting for a while.
That's awesome.
So she called in and it was like so phenomenal to talk to her. Like everything she said was amazing. And I also had a couple of moments where I kind of looked at the girls and I was like, yep. I had told you guys that earlier. I know you didn't believe me, but now you do because Gwen said it. And it was like amazing because all the girls were just sitting there like open mouthed.
They
couldn't believe
it. If you're listening
to
this and you don't know who Gwen Jorgensen is, I'm going to tell you, just go Google and then
Olympic gold medalist and world champion in triathlon.
Just
and
complete badass.
And she's like, and she's so wonderful. And I know so much of her stuff so well because like, I just love, like she's one of my like favorite athletes. So I follow her really closely and I was kind of fangirling. Probably even maybe a little bit harder than most of the girls at the camp Quest.
Well,
don't
you know,
sue me.
I did like Sven-ness like video, the Gwen-ness videos because like Pat Lemieux, Tim, I'm going to say it for you, former cyclocross champ from Minnesota.
Yes.
he got, because he always followed the Sven-ness stuff and he was like, hey, would you ever consider doing that for a triathlon? And I was I think
so
like
funny.
As we were talking on the phone, I think he could see my eyes rolling. He's like, no, you need to go watch ITU triathlon. Mm-hmm. It's different. They
it's
actually
cool.
race each other on the bike. I'm like, okay. And it's cool. It's
cool.
It is cool.
Yeah.
You know, it's the it changes the whole dynamic of the race.
But it really does. Yeah.
Anyway, she's like the best ever.
So Gwen's like really amazing. And the fact that she took time out of her busy and also pregnant life to chat with us was like mind-boggling, and I was like crying
like,
listening
gets,
to her
like, appearance fees to talk
and like just one day they were like hey could we call it in, and so like the one thing that actually Patrick had said about Gwen was that at the end of, so she started racing in 2010, went to the Olympics in 2012, so that's 2 years, think about that for a minute. Mm-hmm. And then after 2012 London, she did quote okay, I think is like what she called it. After that, at the beginning of that next 4-year cycle, she was like, Patrick had said that she was the only person in the ITU field, in the women's field, that said, I want to win gold at Rio. It's like, she made it real and she made it, she like made herself accountable for it. And so one thing like for Gwen, I understand that like for her with how good she is and how much talent she has and like past results, saying that she wanted to get first was like the only result that she would have been happy with, because she knew that if she had, this is all stuff that Patrick said, and I can relate to with like my like mindfulness training, is like if she had the perfect day and had the perfect process, then she could get gold. For me, I try not to put too much of an effort on a result on a given day. And I really struggled and kind of overcame this last year where like I was getting second a ton, but I was getting second to like Katie and Katarina. And so I was like disappointed that I was second, because everyone always says like second place is the first loser. And I think anyone who's ever been good at sports would never say that. Mm-hmm. That's only something that like non-athletes say. But for me, I was like getting disappointed with getting second all the time. And then I realized like, look who you're getting second to, and look at where you were last year. And so for me, like, yes, I would be so happy. I'd be over the moon to be able to win nationals, like to keep it going. And I think that if I can like freaking keep myself off the ground and stop breaking helmets and like finally get back to training, it's a possibility. And it's obviously something that I'm working for. And I think anyone who says that they're not working for that is probably lying.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, it's something that I'd absolutely love to try for. If I get there, and I don't care if I get there and I get fifth, but yeah. I was like, that's the best race I could have had. Absolutely. But I'm hoping that I've improved a lot over last year. And so yeah, it's something that I'm going for.
I think it's funny when you talk about not out, because I think you are the one of the best examples of that. And you had to explain it, which I thought was crazy, about being happy with your world's result.
Yeah. Last year. Oh my God. Yeah. That's so, it was so funny to me. Yeah. Everyone thought that I would be disappointed because I was second. And I was like, no, because I came in there and everyone thought that it was going to be an Anne-Marie, Evie, and Laura show. I was absolutely not a podium favorite. And so like keeping that out of my head and knowing that if I had my best day, that I actually could be on the podium. Like, yes, I was in first for a little while, but like I had my best ride. Like sometimes I do think about that dab where I put my foot down on that right turn.
I know. Yeah. Exactly what you're talking about.
But
yeah.
the truth was, is like two turns from there was like the S turn chicane. Yep. S-cane. Oh, that's a new one. Down the hill where Anne-Marie was riding that 3 or 4 seconds faster than me every lap. So if it wasn't there, it probably would have been there. Like, I don't think that if it hadn't been for that dab, right. I would have won. I think that, like, Anne-Marie was better on the day. Yeah. And she was world champion, you know? Yeah. So, like, I was happy because, like, second place actually far exceeded my goals.
And, you know, in some sense, almost have to forgive the people who were feeling that for you. And you're right. It's the parent. It's the fan. It's like you feel it so much more because you're not part of it. So you can't get rid of that energy while you're doing it. And we all saw it. And we were all like, you know, everybody was holding their breath while you're coming through that last lap. And then you see it, you're just like, no. And
yeah.
So that's, you know, what everyone thinks. That's it. That's the moment. And that's the moment there, she, quote, lost the race.
The difference there was everyone who was like, oh my God, I'm so happy that you were happy with second. Everyone was being really positive. They were like, we thought that you'd be disappointed, but we're happy that you're happy with it.
Yeah.
The second place is the first loser thing I was talking about is like how people always say that in general. Like,
yeah.
But I think at Worlds, it was a very different situation where people were like, we're so happy that you're not disappointed because you shouldn't be disappointed. Right.
But then hopefully once, you know, down the road when you start, Lindsay Bear had an interview with Petam Mullins, and she was talking about how when you're used to winning, it's difficult to be happy when you're second, you know, but again, that's something to strive for where you're at a place where that's a disappointment.
Right.
But at this point, you know, especially on the world level, it can't be.
Yeah, it's definitely something that takes some getting used to. But I think really the biggest thing for me is like you can be disappointed with second if you felt like you should have been first. Like if you made like a major mistake or like you're not in it, disappointment doesn't really take you very far. Like unless disappointment's going to get you out of bed the next day to like keep working on your weaknesses, then I don't think that it's like a super constructive emotion. But yeah, I mean, the biggest thing is like just asking yourself, did I have the best race within my control? If the answer is yes, then like you kind of have to be happy with it and then just keep forging forward.
All right. Let's talk about this quest.
Yes.
That was pretty awesome. And
thank you.
You pulled it off. It seemed like it was a big success.
Whew, yeah, but I barely pulled it off.
Well, yeah. So if we rewind this 30 minutes, you're talking about minimizing distractions and other things so you can sort of like be focused on racing and doing well and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then you take on, I mean, I run clinics. I know what it's like. It's not easy. It's a lot of logistics. It's a lot of planning. And then you were pretty much wearing all of the hats for it. So
yeah. And it was an overnight. So I was like
living,
living, breathing.
So just walk me through getting the idea, wanting to do it, why, and then just how the weekend went.
So, well, one thing I wanted to say first, and I actually thought about this earlier when we were talking about like speaking up for like what you believe in. A lot of people ask me like, well, what are you going to do if one of these girls is like the one to dethrone you? Or like, what are you going to do if they become better than you? First and foremost, I freaking hope that they do.
Yeah.
That would be like amazing for me for a couple of reasons. One, as like one of my favorite quotes in terms of like equality and working with like mentoring is a rising tide lifts all ships. And so like if these women become better, it's going to make a better sport for me and my fellow competitors. it's also going to push me harder. Like, I don't want to become complacent. If I know that these girls are coming, and let me tell you, they will be, if they're nipping at my heels, then like, I need to work harder. Like, I never want to feel like I'm comfortable with my level of anything, whether it's skills or power or whatever, or like even mental stuff. But the most important thing that I really wanted to drive home is like, yeah, a rising tide lifts all ships, as I said. But the thing is if it were about me, I would have spent the week motor pacing, or I would have gone home and put my legs up. Like, it's not just about me. Like, this week was far from about me. Like, I wanted to like give this knowledge that I'm super fortunate to have. And like, I wanted to help other people have a career in cycling. And I think that actually the most amazing thing is I think that we kind of did that.
Yeah.
Like, we really did give these girls some really great momentum leaving. And yeah, so it just everyone wants to know like, well, like, why do you do it and all this stuff? And I was like, it wasn't about me. And so like I said, if it were, then I wouldn't have done it, because it wasn't, it was like energizing and it was like rejuvenating to like get to connect with these women. But it absolutely wasn't like, oh, I'm a way better professional cyclist for it.
What was the age gap? It was from,
So we had a little bit of confusion around the ages that were there, but we ended up having we had one 11-year-old actually, which was amazing, through 18.
Okay.
So huge age gap. Yeah. Basically, like, I was in Spain this winter and I was like kind of bumming out, like just having a really hard time. And I started thinking about like, I don't know, how like my summer camp experience as a kid and how I wish that, you know, a program, funny enough that I wish that a program like Montana Cyclocross Camp would have a women's program. And subsequently they did, which was amazing too. But I was just thinking about how amazing it would be for a program like that. And then I was like, well, I think that people's main complaint when people are asking like, well, like, we need equal payout or like, we need more women's teams. It's like, well, then go do it.
Right.
I'm a big believer in doing. Yeah, yeah. Like, put your money where your mouth is, or whatever people want to say. And so for me, I was like, well, what's stopping you? Like, you have all of the necessary skills to do this. It's just scary. Mm. So like basically that day, I remember it came to me and I like ran out of the bathroom and just like kind of screamed into the living room because I was brushing my teeth. So I had like toothbrush in my mouth. I was like, what if we did a women's camp? So from there, like almost immediately, I realized that it like basically couldn't be done because I needed. So this is super funny. This was in February or March. I realized that I didn't have enough time to get a permit to be a licensed cyclocross camp in the state of Massachusetts.
Oh,
it was
okay.
Like too much to get a license. Just for the listeners at home, most camps don't actually have licenses because it's not that big of a deal. But this will come back. The story is going to come back all the way, come back around. So this was in February. I realized that like couldn't be done. But then I got home and I just couldn't stop thinking about it. And it's like, if it scares you and excites you at the same time, it means you should do it. I think is like one of the other. I'm a big quote person. So I was like, all right, well, like, we're going to keep trying for it. And so I like had a website. And I was like 3 days from launching the camp when I very, very, very suddenly had to move out of the house that I was living in, that I was supposed to run the camp out of. And the person who was going to assistant coach with me was no longer able to assistant coach. And so I was like, well, it's like a one-man circus now and I don't have a house. So it's over. Like, I was like, it's done. Next, like, I basically decided that, like, okay, next year I'll have made really great progress on it. And then about 2 weeks later, I was like really depressed about it. Like, I mean, it was just like, I was sick. I had like moved into this random house. I had no camp to look forward to. And my coach Al called me and he was like, hey, I'm driving right now. And I just think you should do it. I think that you just need to try. He's like, whatever it is this year, whatever it becomes, just get it off the ground. And so like by the time we hung up the phone, we had decided that I was going to invite 4 of my like young cycling besties to sleep on air mattresses in my apartment for the week. And that's what it was. And within 48 hours, I had a website, a house, and a bike reg with 12 spots and some pretty big plans. So within like another 24, like we had already almost filled registration.
Yeah, you filled out then quick.
We almost sold out within 24 hours, which was absolutely insane. Like, I didn't know if people would do it. And I like went out to dinner. I like posted the video on Instagram that was like, hey, it's happening. Went out to dinner. By the time I come got back, I had 6 registrants.
Yeah. Matt.
Yes.
Can you get that, please?
Yes.
Thank you. Sorry.
Little store bitch.
Well, you had Sarkisov, local DC.
Yes.
Area.
Oh my gosh.
Isn't she pretty awesome?
Yeah. She's what's the word? A firecracker.
Yeah.
Is what I would describe her as. She. It scares me a little bit. She reminds me a little bit of myself when I was her age, but. Yeah, so we had so many amazing women.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, just finishing up here. Come on in.
Hey, no worries.
That's hour number 2. This is my Mount St. Anne podcast.
Yes,
marathon
I love it.
Day. Yeah, it's good.
All right,
good.
Well, I'll wrap it up. I just have a little more drama to
keep going. Yeah.
So I,
I'm not editing any of that out. It's all staying.
Oh, great.
Even Matt's comments.
Door bitch. Yeah, so like full registration, amazing. And then 3 weeks before... we get there. But 3 weeks before everyone's set to arrive, we have all 12 athletes set. Bikes are getting shipped. The works. Like, I have, like, a food order in. I mean, like, everything, like, is done to the T. And I'm at, where was I? Minneapolis North Star Grand Prix. And I get an email from the health department in Northampton that said, we've gotten word from an anonymous tip that you are running an illegal camp in the state of Massachusetts.
From an anonymous tip.
Yeah. Someone who did not want to give their name called the Northampton Health Department and said that I'm running an illegal camp. And they said, if you do not file for licensing, we will file a cease and desist.
Wow.
So I was like, okay, that's a lot. That was like a lot. And so like, as I had mentioned in April or when was it? In February, I had realized that it was too late to get a license then. We were 20 days out.
Yeah.
So basically it was just kind of a matter of like, well, what do we do? How do we make it not a camp? Turns out if you don't call it a camp, it's not a camp.
Oh, is that so? Okay. Yeah.
So yeah, that's where like the very, very heavy-handed quest came from. I wanted it to be as far removed.
But that worked.
Yeah, the Northampton Health Department was like, we don't care if it's not a camp. Like,
yeah.
Because, I mean, all we were doing really was having the most baller sleepover ever.
Holy crap, there's a lot of guys up here now.
Yeah.
Look at this. Everybody came. Sweet. Give me 5 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah. So basically, I ended up making a video at the end of the week where every girl looked at the camera and had my catchphrase for the week was, not a camp. Every time someone would call a camp, I'd be like, not a camp. Don't say that. So that's why I was like, don't sue me. It's not a camp. So yeah, we had a good laugh about it. It happened nevertheless. But, yeah, a lot of drama made me think that maybe, just maybe, this wasn't the year. But at the end, it was a 6-day, 5-night overnight camp or quest in East Hampton, Massachusetts.
Nice.
No injuries, awesome. No broken bikes, and a lot of happy tears at the end of the week.
Good. So yeah. Something you're going to do again?
Absolutely.
Yeah. When I was covering Mountain Bike Nationals and was doing the... What was supposed to be a recap show, but then it became shorter and my sort of people I was working for was like, well, it's not really a show. Let's not call it a show. So then much like it wasn't a camp that I was just hashtagging everything NARS, which is not a recap show.
Yes. Yeah, that's amazing.
That was awesome. Well, it was good talking to you again.
Yeah.
I wish it was under a little better conditions and you're racing tomorrow.
Yeah,
and you hadn't hit your head.
I know. But you know what? This is better. At least I get some, we get to have some fun, and I get to hang out with CX Hairs and do some fun stuff.
Awesome. All right. Well, feel free to stick around. And if you're listening to this, you'll probably have to wait another week or maybe a couple days. I don't know. Whenever I get it up. But now we're going to talk to all the USA MTB kids.
All right.
I called y'all kids.
Kids. I do feel like they're kids compared to me, but apparently they're like a year younger. So. Yeah.
All right.
Thank you. 21. I know you are.
Fitter, happier, more productive, comfortable, wider, angle, podium, member, drive. Join the Wide Angle Podium Network. Get on better with your associate employee contemporaries. As low as $5 a month. Swag and bonus content. No more microwave dinners. Go to wideanglepodium.com/donate. No killing moths.